We are remembering Owen Arthur on Down to Brass Tacks. In the first half of the programme, we have with us on the line Sir David Summons, former Finance Minister Chris Sinclair, and Ambassador Dr. Clyde Maskell. Dr. Maskell, when you look back at the period in which Owen Arthur presided over the economic affairs of this country, what would you identify as his major economic successes?
Well, let's be saying, in 1994, when he won after the IMF program that the previous administration underwent, the environment of stability was on its way. The question was, can we create an environment in which the economy can start to grow, generate foreign exchange, and by extension, employ Barbadians? And in all fairness, given the barometers, you would conclude that the administration created substantial jobs during that period. Our reserves turned around, our fiscal condition, but what he did, perhaps unknown to the public, was to institute a policy where he tried to limit the debt to GDP ratio, that is the fiscal deficit, sorry, the GDP ratio to 2.5% or less. And the importance of that policy was to restrict the financing of the deficit from the central bank. And that was accomplished over that period. But in all fairness, that policy actually dates back to a paper that he had done in 1983 while he was a fellow at the ICER, the Institute for Economic and Research. So that I don't think one can fault his performance on the economic front, except I would say this, and it was my refrain then, it still is now. I thought at the time that we should not be thinking only in terms of growth, but restructuring and repositioning the Barbados economy to cope better with any major changes and movements up ahead. And I think that opportunity came around about 1997 with the introduction of the value-added tax, which yielded a lot more revenue than the government had anticipated. Here is the politician called Owen Arthur. Owen Arthur then decides that he's going to deal with urban and rural development commissions in an attempt to deliver on the social front more so than take the excess resources and look to reposition in the medium to long term the Barbados economy. So I think you can recall that I would frequently talk about the need to restructure the Barbados economy at the time. And it was to make sure that we would have a more diversified economy to be able to handle any movement away from tourism. And that was my thing. But in terms of the success, the evidence is clear. The evidence is clear that based on that success, he has to be regarded as one of the best prime ministers in Barbados.
For you, what would you consider to be the most significant lesson you've learned from him, either as an economist or as a politician?
Oh, there are several, because in all fairness, leading up to the 2008 election, we frequently spoke. He brought me into the office and said, "Clyde, there's a pending international recession, and we have to make sure that we plan for it before it happens in total by 2008. There was evidence at the end of 2007 that the world was heading towards a recession. What I think he is best at, and here's it, Owen Arthur was able to take a mass of confusion and put context to it with a clarity that would be amazing to all. So his ability to contextualize economic phenomenon was remarkable. And he actually enjoyed it. So I think from that perspective, yes. But then more importantly, there's always a political dimension to economic thought, because economists rely on politicians to implement policies and programs. That is what I learned most from him. That is always a political dimension to economic thought.
Sir David Summons, are you there?
Yes,
Yes, from your vantage point, you served as Attorney General to Prime Minister Arthur at the time. What stood out for you in terms of trying to deal with the social and the political aspects of the challenges that were faced in the period?
Before I answer that, I'm going to revert to the question that the issue you put before the break.
There's the politics of inclusion?
About the politics of inclusion. But first of all, let me just say, speaking personally, but as one of the four or five who supported him for the leadership of the Barbados Labour Party in 1993, it was important for the Barbados Labour Party at that juncture of our history to change the image of the party. We had had lawyers in the leadership before. In fact, we had had three on the trot, Tom Adams, Bree St. John, and Henry Ford. But the condition of Barbados at the time required a leadership that was versed and knowledgeable in economics, and the need to change the image of the Barbados Labour Party. There was an unfortunate perception that the Barbados Labour Party was led by middle class people who supported big business. And Owen Arthur, as a product of the grassroots and working class Barbados, who had shown to the world intellectual and academic excellence, needed the opportunity now to lead. We gave him the opportunity, and in 1994, having won a no confidence motion against then Prime Minister Sandiford, and having brought down the Democratic Labour Party, when we discussed the results of that election, Owen was not happy that the Labour Party, in those circumstances, given the economic privations of 1992 to 1994, given the no confidence motion, the Democratic Labour Party still won 9 seats. And he determined, and shared his thoughts with me, he determined, as he told me, to make the Barbados Labour Party the party of first choice for the 1999 election. And there was a deliberate strategy on his part to not only carry out the policies in the manifesto and create the jobs and reduce the unemployment from the 24.7% that we found in 1994. And he did that successfully, so that when he left in 2008, the unemployment rate was in single digits. But he set out deliberately to cultivate persons from the Democratic Labour Party and persons from that swing vote cohort that always determines the outcome of an election. And I can think of September 19, think it was 1998, that he brought Hammy Lashley into the party. And he gradually went into the Democratic Labour Party and took support from them and won people over to the Barbados Labour Party to expand the share of vote that he was to get in 1999. It was a clever political strategy, and it ended up with Dems getting two seats in 1999. So that was how the politics of inclusion came about. And I tell you this, he used the fact that he was able to associate with the grassroots at a better level than David Thompson to the advantage of the party. Started with the man who used to sell the ham cutters up in Long Gap area, Hammy. We used to hang out there and lime. And you know, when he and I were in the, as two blind mice, we had developed a kind of strategy that we called educated loitering, which was just another phrase for liming in rub shops and trying to swing the vote, particularly in those areas that were against you in an election. I mean, I did it in St. Thomas. He did it in St. Peter. I mean, for example, let me just give you an example. Tom Adams never won Shot Hill on the Main Road or Melrose or Bridgefield. And when I got in and we talked, one of myself, I determined that I was going to go into those areas and work on them and become friends with the people in those areas. So that thereafter, from the election of 1994, I won all the boxes in St. Thomas, some that Tom had not been able to win before. So it was a carefully thought out and crafted political strategy. And Owen Arthur was an exquisite political animal. I don't know how much people have credited him for his understanding of the local political scene and his manipulation of political policies to ensure that his party was successful.
Now, Go ahead.
You mentioned about the social history. Clyde had mentioned that too in passing, and I think that the House of Assembly debates the Hansard would show that when we brought the, I think it was the Urban Development Commission legislation, he explained that this was, a deliberate strategy to be able to use those commissions, the urban and the rural, to deliver services at a very basic societal level to people who had been denied those services and who could not wait on the central government to deliver. For example, MTW, because of the bureaucracy, we wanted a mechanism to drive the delivery of services, and those two were his creations. I like to recall the fact that under Owen's leadership, Barbados recorded 13 years of economic growth. That says all that you want to hear. But there was a construction boom. There was a need because of the success in reducing unemployment. There was a need to bring in Caribbean nationals to work in the construction industry, particularly Guyanese. And he saw all of that as being connected to his desire for, I might say, his philosophy as a regional integrationist. He saw all of that as necessary, part of the development of Barbados. But you know, he was able to change the perception of Barbados and the BLP, but particularly in Barbados, regionally, because under his stewardship, Barbados was no longer seen as a conservative country, but rather as a very progressive country offering paradigms to other countries similarly placed in this region and outside this region. He was very supportive of the efforts that were made to resist the American imposition of a shipwrighter agreement in Barbados. And he was also very supportive of the efforts that were made to fight the OECD in 2001 when they really wanted to wreck service economies in the Caribbean and elsewhere. Thank you, David.
Well, I do recall speaking with him early in his career when this issue of what he called the difficulties within society, the polarization. He said basically, this became the politics of inclusion eventually, but he was coming out of his experience in Jamaica, he was really concerned about having a situation where there was this tribalism, political tribalism was the term that he used. And he went on to speak about this, I remember, an evening in 2002, when he said that in Jamaica he had lost some really good friends because of the political tribalization there. And coming out of that, he brought this concept of trying to avoid the tribalism by having this concept of inclusion, politics of inclusion to Barbados. But you have articulated how you saw it working with him in the Barbados Labour Party. When I come back, I want to hear from Chris Sinclair how he would have seen it from the other side. Now, earlier we heard Sir David Simmons speaking about the political animal that was Owen Arthur. From the other side of the political fence, talk to us, Chris Sinclair, about how the Democratic Labour Party viewed Owen Arthur in that respect, especially as it related to the whole concept of the politics of inclusion.
I think, David, so David really hit the nail on the head, but it was perfectly where that particular strategy is concerned. And I'm happy that he did say it was a strategy, because there's been some debate in Barbados as to whether or not it was a deliberate strategy on the part of to advance the cause of the Barbados Labour Party and to make it a party of number one choice in Barbados. For us in the Democratic Labour Party, it really took us quite by surprise, I should say, and to much chagrin, because clearly no political party likes to see itself having its members bled or removed or invited over or inveigled upon to cross the floor. It is true, though, that in the context of Barbados' political history, persons leaving political parties and, as you would say, crossing the floor or joining opposing parties was not something that was entirely new. However, the way in which, the kind of systematic way in which former Prime Minister Arthur went about doing it would have caused considerable discomfort in the Democratic Labour Party. To some extent, what Sir David indicated, highlighted, was the special nature of what Wayne would have had as perceived in Barbados, and both in real and perceived terms, as a grassroots type of politician, that he was not just another professional politician from, you know, the middle class, who had middle class views of sort, but was able to transcend whatever existing or instant class position he occupied to move among the masses. And that in many ways was kind of contrasting with what people perceive of David Thompson. You would have known as well going forward from that period that by the time Mr. Thompson, late Prime Minister Thompson, came to his political fruition, later to become Prime Minister, he too had done a similar thing where he was able to transcend what people saw was his narrow class confines to be perceived at a more grassroots level because of what he was doing within the community, going around to bars, going to community events, forming families first. So it's kind of like a transition. So he learned, certainly must have observed and learned from Oinatra how to, you know, do a type of politics or practice a kind of politics that would allow you to bring a broader swath of interest to your cause. And I think in that regard, you have to congratulate the late Prime Minister Oinatra for achieving that, I think. And he really did take up quite a few of the good quality persons and led to what I think calls to Peter Wickham and others would have then begin to classify as owing thems, what you call owing thems, who were traditionally supporters of the Democratic Labour Party, but would vote for the Barbados Labour Party because they liked Owen and they liked what he was doing. So I think in that sense, it was a brilliant strategy. It clearly worked. It has had some persistence since then, because I think the current Prime Minister, in some ways, that's probably not as boldly or as openly as perhaps Owen did it as a particular strategy, but it has been there and it has caused some weakening, because when a political party loses significant members, particularly from its intelligentsia, you feel it over time. So I think that was a very good strategy. The strategy of, or the policy of creating the Urban and Rural Development Commissions, I think was, it was certainly what was needed at the time. And it certainly turned out to be very effective politics, if not effective economics. It certainly was very effective politics in the sense that at that period, and for a considerable amount of time, the Democratic Labour Party, which tends more to be have its strongest support in urban and coastal areas, as opposed to the Labour Party, which traditionally had its thing from the rural, more suburban areas of Barbados, certainly the rural areas. I think Oinatra saw an opportunity to deliver a kind of social service or extend the arm of the delivery of social services with a degree of immediacy to the demands that would have been placed on persons living in the urban corridor. He equally was able to do it in the corridor as well, but in the urban corridor especially, because the Democratic Labour Party was known to have had very strong presence in St. Michael. And as you know, the largest catchment of seats are in St. Michael. And at the time, we would have had, you know, going forward from the Patsy Springers and so forth of the past, you would have had Branford Tate, Sir Lloyd Erskine Sandiford, then Erskine Sandiford would have been there as well, and other members within St. Michael, Richie Haynes, before he left the Democratic Labour Party. So Ramsey's Cattle, you can name them. So the Democratic Labour Party had a fairly strong base in St. Michael. And with the urban, we could begin to see some fraying of that base. I think Owen went in there directly, used his grassroots appeal, chose candidates which would have been relatively appealing to the voters in the urban corridor. And that would have allowed, as you would have seen in 1999, and then subsequently from there, to solidify the Labour Party's presence in St. Michael and make it certainly more competitive than it was, you know, in previous elections gone by. So from a political perspective, I don't think you can really call or you can disavow or ignore his capacity. He clearly had a tremendous interest in politics. He studied the social history of Barbados and was able to combine both his skills as an economist, his knowledge of political economy, his experience gained from working and living in Jamaica and seeing urban politics play out, and to utilize that to extremely potent and effective means to, you know, position the Barbados Labour Party as a party of choice in Barbados to, you know, to be okay. as competitive or more competitive than others.
We have the Barbados High Commissioner to Canada, Ambassador Reginald Farley, who has joined us via Zoom as well. We'll hear from him, but we also must tell you that we are standing by to bring you an address to the nation by the Prime Minister of Barbados. We expect that in this address to the nation, she will be paying her own tribute to the life and work of former Prime Minister Owen Arthur. In the meantime, though, let's see if we can take a call. One or two. Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Welcome.
How are you?
I'm well.
Mr. Ellis, first of all, my condolences goes out to Mr. Owen Arthur.
We meet his family.
And his immediate family.
Yeah.
Mr. Ellis, you and I know that when you have passed away, you know, people say, all goodies about you. Mm-hmm. But I brush that aside. Mr. Ellis, I want to say that Mr. Owen bring a new dimension to politics. A charismatic person. He also changed the whole outlook to politics.
How? I need specifics.
When you say change the whole outlook to politics, politics has some flair when his party ran in politics. They were flair. It wasn't dead politics. You know, there was a whole atmosphere, whole open up atmosphere. You know, it was this a lot of energy was involved in it. You know what I mean, right?
Did it attract you?
It attracted me, and it attracted a lot of others as well. It attracted me, and it attracted a lot of others.
Did it hold you?
Yes. I would also say he leave a legacy behind, and that legacy would be that he, to me, became one of the most popular leaders in the whole entire Caribbean when it comes to politics wise. The whole entire Caribbean. You know, I mean, let us be fair and frank. We are only human beings. He made one or two mistakes, but that isn't enough to give him the credits that he deserves. You know.
What do you consider to have been the mistakes that he's made?
Well, I don't want to sound too harsh. Okay, I can say one. The selling of the bank, National Bank, you know, let me leave that for another debate.
Another debate.
But Mr. Ellis, let me tell you this. You see, before I wasn't born in Grantley Adams' time. I was born. I remember Barrow. I remember Barrow politics. It's still the politics. I was born in Tom Adams' politics. I was born in Owen Arthur politics, and was also born in Frank Dunstall politics. And before the shadow of doubt, you would have to hand it to David Thompson. I mean, to Owen Arthur and Mr. Tom Adams. You would have to hand it over to both of them. You know, they're two greats. Can't say anything else. Two greats. Not saying that Barrow or Mr. Barrow did great, but So we're looking at the charismatic side of these two men.
Okay. Well, while we stand by for this live broadcast with the Prime Minister of Barbados, let's take another call. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good. Hello.
Yes, sir.
I too would like to send my empathy to the family of the late Prime Minister. I think he was an outstanding leader, but I'd like to just highlight a couple of the things that is stand out.
Yes.
Now, yes, like I agree with Mr. Simpson and me, Simpson. He took Barbados, he took the BLP to, as a party of first choice. That would go without saying. Now, after the Sandiford administration went to the IMF, he also made a significant change there as well. When he asked the people from the IMF to leave the country, and he implemented policies that turned the economy around. Like, I remember he reduced the corporate taxes. That helped, spend the economy, right? He also produced 100% mortgages. That's the first time that was ever introduced. Outstanding again, when he refused to sign the ship writers, and the president had to come down to Barbados to sign over a fresh one. Right? During his tenure, he had what you would consider for a small country, full employment, 6.7%, which resulted in the labor shortage, where you had to bring people from throughout the Caribbean, because we also had a building boom around us. To my mind, Mr. Arthur took Barbados on the doorsteps of a first world status. He was just on the steps, just about to open the door. He also created history in 1999. That's the first time that a government ever created a landslide at the election. It's generally the opposition, when the opposition created a landslide. 1999, Mr. Arthur created that history. He also created history again with the Cricket World Cup in 2007. That's the first time a small country like Barbados ever hosted a world event. Fishing agreement, again, another standout again, when he took Trinidad and Tobago to the court of arbitration, right? And, well, like, I leave it there because he reversed tax as well. That was another outstanding thing that he did, the reverse tax for the people on the earning less than urban and rural was another outstanding thing to change the whole dynamics of development, delivering social things to the poor people.
Okay.
So I leave it there.
Thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Well, the Prime Minister is addressing the nation. She just began, and we are therefore going to cross over to her for that address to the nation.
Ahead with the mission as he believed we would succeed. He believed in Barbados and in what we could achieve. That reinforcement of what we could do anchored us on a journey for which I shall always be grateful. The one Arthur that I knew was never overwhelmed by the task at hand. Face it and fix it. That was his mantra. Indeed, his greatest domestic legacy will be considered by many as the wrestling of unemployment from the horrendous highs of the early 1990s to under 7% in 2008. It seems like an archaic economic achievement, but it meant real things to real Bajans in real ways.
Hello.
The promise that many doubted at the outset of his tenure was delivered over the three terms, the creation of 30,000 jobs. And when it came to our country, Owen defended Barbados with a ferocity that reinforced in many that he understood and accepted that those who went before had set a very high standard for the defense of our country, and that he was duty-bound to continue in the same vein. This strong patriotism was anchored by a burning passion for regional integration and for the Caribbean civilization. This passion fortunately coincided with his responsibility as the lead Prime Minister in CARICOM for the single market and single economy. I was with Owen in Jamaica when he signed in early 2006, with tremendous pride, the instrument that brought the CARICOM single market into existence. He was brimming with pride. On another front, Owen set out to, and did master the art of politics. But he never in so doing compromised his economic training and his commitment at all times to sound policy. It was his hallmark. Owen from the early 1990s molded a new class of politician in this country and changed in many ways how those representatives would serve to better need the change in needs, would serve the better chances and obligations of a politician as they served their constituents. He worked assiduously in his own St. Peter to make this the new standard for political mobilization and representation for all. And we all followed. I witnessed it firsthand as I managed 4 election campaigns for him, 2 general elections and 2 by-elections. On looking back at the closing years of the last century and the early years of this century, there is no doubt, my friends, that Owen Seymour Arthur was the man for the times. Owen never lost the thirst for public policy, not even after he left government. His counsel, especially on the Barbadian economy, was rendered to all governments. Indeed, it was on this platform where duty met politics and policy in the national interest that he and I, we, would anchor our most recent relationship. And I thank him for meeting me here in the last 18 months. I asked him to serve in a number of key areas, including in a Jobs and Investment Advisory Council. This came after his work in the last year as he helped this government in the forging of a new industrial policy and in the review of the international trade options of small island developing states as we prepared ourselves to be the smallest country to host an UNCTAD assembly. His work will continue as we continue those preparations and will be built upon. Tragically, COVID would put paid to one of his very last assignments, the chairmanship of LEAT. It was with a heavy heart that he and his board recommended the liquidation of LEAT 1974 Limited. Owen was conscious that he made the decision to increase Barbados' participation with LEAT at the turn of the century in a previous time, but that the scale of the impact of COVID and the state of the company as it is today would make that task virtually out of our reach, and certainly as Barbadians, given all that we now had to face with COVID. My friends, our country, Barbados, is the poorer for his passing. His intellect was larger than life, believe you me. His love of country as constant as the Northern Star. The last title bestowed on him was the most fitting, Professor of Practice. For Owen was first and foremost a teacher, taking the most complex economic issues and stripping them down to be understood by the average man and average woman in shop. His keen sense of history and of politics shared daily with an emerging class of politicians that he would claim responsibility for bringing to public life. As I said earlier, a man of his time and for the times in which he served. He discharged his duty as Prime Minister of Barbados and as a Caribbean leader with distinction. He shall remain in that pantheon of Caribbean leaders. On behalf of the government and the people of Barbados, we say thank you to Owen Seymour Arthur and to his family for his service to a grateful nation and to a proud people. To his wife Julie and his daughters Sabrina and Leah, and his granddaughter, to his siblings, we extend our deepest condolences. To all who ensured his friendship and who supported him, we also extend our deepest condolences. The appropriate arrangements for the state funeral will be attended to by the Honorable Colin Jordan and by the Cabinet Office. It is at this time that nations find it necessary to reflect. And I urge all Barbadians to so reflect over the course of the next 3 days of official mourning. I remind us that during this period, that reflection should be accompanied by the appropriate behavior and the appropriate music in public spaces. I also remind us that thereafter and from today, Barbados's flag will be flown at half mast until such time as Mr. Arthur's remains are interred. May his soul rest in peace. And may his family be buttressed by the prayers of all Barbadians, as I ask you, wherever you are, to uplift his family in prayer and to reflect on the manner in which he positively contributed to the life of our nation. I thank you.
Well, you've heard the comments from Prime Minister Mia Mottley in tribute to the late Owen Arthur, former Prime Minister of Barbados. On the line with us, we have Reginald Farley, Barbados's newly appointed High Commissioner, Barbados's High Commissioner to Canada. Good morning, Mr. Farley. It's 11:48. And
good morning,
having
David,
heard
good morning,
Prime Minister Mottley, what are your thoughts?
First of all, let me join, and along with my family, in extending condolences to Julie and Leah, Sabrina, brothers and sisters, their family. This certainly is a time of loss for them as it is for us. And let me just say that sometimes for those of us in public life, people can so embrace us and take us for what we do in public, that they sometimes forget that at the end of the day, we're just people. We have family, friends, our loves, our passions, and that at times like these, yes, we've lost a prime minister, but they've lost a husband, a father, grandfather, brother, sister, schoolmate, and for them, we have to bear them up at this time. We must at this time both mourn Owen's loss as well as celebrate his life. And what a difference that life has made. He was able to ensure that the Barbadian ambition of making sure that our origin at birth does not dictate our destination by the time we arrive at the door of death. He was able to rise from the rural parish of St. Peter to lift Barbados up, being the number one developing country as measured by all indices in the world during the time of his leadership as Prime Minister. For me, it was an honor to have been asked by him to join the cabinet in 1994 and to serve with him for the 14 years. It was not an easy time. Prime Minister made mention of the fitting nature of his title of professor by practice. And in many ways, being in cabinet reminded me of being in tutorials at university. And you know, those are different from lectures. And lectures, the lecturer speaks and you all listen. In tutorials, no one can go there expecting a free ride. 10 or so students, one student may lead the discussion, but everyone has to pipe in and anyone can be called upon. So on a Thursday, you dare not go to cabinet having not read your papers, especially those that you will present. He knew much about many of the areas that we were covering, and he sometimes would have, as he said, his tongue sharpened on both sides. And that was a term he used in relation to his rather interesting and active and a very great capacity to inflict some political blows on the campaign. But it also reflected his style. If you read his papers when he was at the University of West Indies and the ISER, as well as in cabinet. And at the end of the day, his objective was if you're going to put forward a position, you have to be able to justify it. You have to make sense of it. If you cannot convince us, your colleagues in cabinet, how can you convince the public that this is the way to go? So I support all of what has been said so far in terms of the achievements. But let me just remind that Wes Owen's achievements as an economist are so outstanding that people immediately gravitate to that. Let us just remind ourselves that Owen was also an historian, and he says that he had an offer of a scholarship to do his master's in history. He chose economics. And it will help you to understand why some of his social transformation was rooted in history and an understanding of Barbados as a post-slavery, post-emancipation, post-plantation society. He was also a classical scholar. And in fact, those in his age group says that his nickname at school was Tacitus. He was able to quote from those old scholars, and it colored his language, his thinking. So he had a philosophical background. He was indeed, as the PM said, a man of his times and a man for the times. His love for St. Peter was apparent and infectious. He used to make the point quite clearly that he is not leaving any development plan in the will for St. Peter, then he can do as much of it as possible while he is elected. Yes, there'll be future things to do, but he is not going to postpone. And the point he made is this. If I'm the Prime Minister of Barbados, and I'm the Member of Parliament for St. Peter, and I cannot represent my constituency, which is also the parish of my birth, well, then how can I help those distant and varied parishes? So also was a very skillful politician. But again, because he is very good at that, people sometimes would think that everything he did was political in the kind of negative connotation that persons sometimes put on politics. And in fact, Owen was able to understand that politics was about using power for the possibilities of development of his people. For example, the matter of politics of inclusion was not a devious scheme to wreck the opposition. You know? It was really, as Sir David said, out of his experience in Jamaica, recognizing we had to not only have a good economy by following economic fundamentals, but by having a society marked by social inclusion, social justice, and participation. And it was really about broadening the democracy to make sure that we did not have a situation there as a party, as a government, that we won, and we figure we have the spoils and it is only for our people. And it was really more of a philosophical underpinning. And the fact that some folks from the opposition came over was not the in all and be all of the politics of inclusion. So I will pause there for now, but I'll probably leave just a colorful tribute. So David mentioned the enlightened walkabout. And I would say that Owen never lost the common touch. And even as Prime Minister, you could stumble upon Owen in some of the most obscure places. For example, Owen frequented Silver Sands in my constituency of Christchurch East. And in fact, one of my former opponents, Tyrone Eswick, of blessed memory, Tyrone confessed to me that he knew that he had lost the seat of Christchurch East in 1999, then on going to a certain popular establishment in Silver Sands, which had hitherto the patriarch was a supporter of the Democratic Labour Party. When he pushed the door one day, he saw Owen at the man's table eating a pigtail. And he knew that that man would not have allowed any Barbados Labour Party supporter to cross the doors. But they're the fond memories of him playing dominoes. And people say, I think I know this man, you know, but he never said who he was. I'll leave this other one to be speak again. And that is, Owen also took the concerns of working people and entrepreneurs seriously. He used to remind that his father was a butcher and an entrepreneur himself, and that the government should not have its regulations or its operatives stand in the way of people who have to take their chances to live. So there were some complaints that we made, Christchurch East and South, about conditions at Oyston's Market. And Owen left cabinet one day, went up there. They claimed he caught a Zedar and Cain, but the truth is he parked over the grannies and walk over to the Oysters Bay Garden on the beach side. So people saw him walking from across the street, he caught a ZR. And he went in there and went to town concerning the conditions, and there were improvements. But that was the nature of the man, his mission, and his focus on improvement for the people of Barbados, particularly those of the working class.
Coming right back.